If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raina Troy Radio, episode 548, coming to you on Wednesday, July 24th. It is the debut day of USC at Big Ten Media Days in Indianapolis. We're not in Indianapolis. We're still in LA, but we're still going to be able to talk all about what happened over 2,000 miles away. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Raina Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/RainaTroy. Email address, RainaTroy@fanside.com. And our phone number, 818-643-7227. Second Whisper and Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joining along with my co-host here in the Raina Troy Studio in Los Angeles, Alicia D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. This is a trope we've been doing for a solid, like, baker's dozen of season.
Yes.
Dozen seasons, baker's dozen, whatever it is. However many it's been. It's been a while. Alicia, the official start of football season is Media Day, right?
Well, it used to be Pac-12 Media Day.
Well, now it's Big Ten Media Days.
Now it's Big Ten Media Days.
But it's still Media Day because SC is only there one day. You
Correct.
Know what I mean?
Yes.
So it still is Media Day.
It's Media Day.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's Media Day. Plus, Chelsea's preseason starts in an hour and a half up in Santa Clara. So as far as I'm concerned, football season does start today.
It is truly wild how, and we say this all the time, how quickly everything comes, but especially when you're a soccer fan and a football fan, because for some reason I don't expect the soccer preseason to begin around the same time as what we can refer to as the college football preseason, which is the start of camp. But like that's literally where we're at. Camp starts next week. Media Day was today, and the season is literally just around the corner.
To quote one of my favorite movies, one of the greatest movies ever made, It's all happening.
I'm going to pretend that I know what
Almost you're Famous. To. Come on.
Oh, okay.
You're kidding me. I watched Almost Famous with you, right?
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was great. Yeah. I had never seen it before watching it with you.
I always like the name Almost Famous because it implies that you don't have it made, but you're almost famous. You're almost there. You're tangentially related to things, which I don't know about you, but when I'm looking for a good deal, I wish I had it in, but sometimes I don't. But sometimes, even when you're on the fringe and you're almost famous, you can still kind of get a good deal. And as much as I love a deal as much as the next guy, I'm not going to subject myself to some, like, proverbial DMV trip just to save a buck. It's got to be easy, you know? No hoops, no BS. So, Lisa, when Mint Mobile said that they were coming and it was going to be easy to get wireless for $15 a month with the purchase of a 3-month plan, I had my doubts. But, you know, it sort of turned out it was actually kind of easy to get wireless for $15 a month. The longest process was like being on the phone with the old guys and ending things with them. It's super easy to join on their website when you go to mintmobile.com/Troy, T-R-O-Y, Troy. There you'll see that. All 3-month plans are just $15 a month, including the unlimited plan. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone. With any Mint Mobile plan, bring your own phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Maybe you might want to comb through those. Always a good idea to, you know, take out people who you're no longer talking to. But you can bring everybody else along with you. Find out how to switch. It's easy at Mint Mobile. You get 3 months premium wireless service for $15 a month. You got to be a new customer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month by going to mintmobile.com/Troy. That's mintmobile.com/Troy. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Troy. There is $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. We're all just doing math here, right? New customers on the first 3-month plan only. Slower speeds available above 40 gigs on the limited plans. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I made it.
You made it. You did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You survived. You know why? Because it's all happening.
It's all happening. The ad read is happening.
It's all happening. It's all happening. You know what else is happening? The news. Let's get to it. A lot of stuff from Big Ten Media Days. Before we get to it, I think the biggest news is we got a super chat.
It's all happening in the chat. Everyone's saying hello. Master Sith comes in with a super chat. I'm calling on the NCAA to reverse the robbery of the Furch College Football 25 matchup between Michael and Alicia. She won that game.
Nope.
Thank you, Master Sith. Thank you. I agree. That was some BS. The onside kick was a glitch.
Fully recovered. Recovered glitch. Legally.
Did you see my player try to attempt to scoop that ball?
It was recovered.
It was a glitch.
If you haven't watched, go watch our stream here on YouTube of our battle, USC against USC last week. If anything, you don't have to watch the whole thing. Just go to the fourth quarter.
Come for the entertaining fourth quarter. Stay for the, as West Texas Mike puts it, muffled primal scream at the end. We'll leave it at that.
It's a great finish. Yeah. I promise. But thank you, Master Sith, for the super chat. You're appreciated. Let's get into Big Ten Media Days. We're going to start with the preseason poll. It is out. Purdue picked dead last to finish 18th in the conference. But that's not what you're listening for. You want number one. Number one is Ohio State's 21 first place votes. Number two, Oregon, the Oregon Ducks, with 6, 3, Penn State, 4, Michigan, 5, Iowa, 6, your USC Trojans. 7, Wisconsin. 8, Nebraska. 9, Rutgers. 10, Washington. Washington, the team that nearly won the national championship. They went to the national championship game. 10th in the Big Ten. They're projected to finish. Maryland, 11. 12, Sky Umah, Minnesota. 13, Illinois. 14, Northwestern. 15, the guys from down the road, UCLA. 16, Michigan State, the Michigan State Staters. And 17, Indiana. And 18, their in-state pals from the Northwest region, Purdue.
Yeah, it's interesting because this poll kind of reflects to me what I think about the Big Ten this year, which is it's less about a ranking and more about tiers.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State and Oregon are far and away the top tier. And then you've got this, like, might be good, could contend, but we're not going to bank on it quite yet, of Penn State and Michigan. Iowa and USC are very much in the, do they belong in the Michigan-Penn State bracket yet, or are they going to fall into the middling sort of good but not great middle tier of Wisconsin and Nebraska and Rutgers and Washington and sort of Maryland, Minnesota, and Illinois, all teams with a pulse, but yeah. You know, I think people look at Wisconsin and Nebraska and think they could take another step forward, but for the most part it's sort of hard to differentiate those teams. And then you just got the bottom tier, which is Northwestern, UCLA, Michigan, Indiana, and Purdue. And I think you could, with those two tiers, the middle tier and the bottom tier, you could sort of shake them up and spin them around and come to any different mix of those, you know, 5 or 6 teams in each of those tiers.
Mm-hmm.
It'll all come down to sort of who underperforms their talent or their situation and who doesn't. I mean, UCLA could be a better team this year than people think they are and have a terrible record. So,
yeah.
You know, it's tough for UCLA. Michigan State's in a weird spot. Northwestern's in a weird spot. It's always a little bit hard to differentiate. There was a little bit of conversation about whether or not USC was too low in this. And
I don't think so.
So here's what I will argue. I'm inclined to think that USC can certainly feel hard done by being 6th. I think that USC can certainly make an argument to be ahead of Iowa and wants to be in that mix of Penn State and Michigan. Do I think that you know, media members in Big Ten country are going to give USC that benefit of the doubt? No, I don't think they are, and that's why I don't think that this is should be a surprise to anybody. USC still has to prove itself on many levels to be able to even have that conversation. Besides which, I kind of dig it. I think that USC, as the sort of chip on their shoulder underdog, is a better position to be in than the overrated USC. So
I don't think this is a weird spot at all. I think this is exactly where they should be. I think that when you break it down with the tiers, I think it makes a lot of sense. Ohio State and Oregon have the most talent right now going into the season, right? Penn State and Michigan, I think, are in that next tier, like you said. Proven teams, absolutely proven teams, but there's big question marks. Question marks is Penn State hasn't been able to not just be the chalk champ, right? Where they're going to beat everybody below them, but lose to anyone above them. Mm-hmm. So until then, they're not going to be in the top tier. And then Michigan, they lost so much, they sort of have to reprove themselves after winning the national title. But when you get below that, Iowa and SC, I think, are fully a step forward ahead of, we talk about Wisconsin, Nebraska, Rutgers, even Washington, sort of, even though there's just a gigantic question mark about them, right? Like,
the question for Washington is, how much do you respect Jed Fish?
Yeah, which I respect Jed Fish a lot.
I respect Jed Fish a lot, and I think they've probably recruited their two deep decently well. The problem is,
it's year one.
They've literally replaced the entire two deep, and I do not know what to make of that.
They might be a tough team to play, but I don't necessarily think they're going to have a good record to show for it.
Yeah.
But Wisconsin, Nebraska, Rutgers. Rutgers was sort of very good last year for being Rutgers. It took a step forward with Shiano rebuilding the program. they could take another step forward and be a dark horse to try to threaten to get themselves in the conference championship game. Maybe.
Schiano's a good coach.
Nebraska and Wisconsin are in rebuilds, and it's very possible that when you are in a good situation, and they both have good head coaches, when you're in a good situation, year two is really when you start to, you know, run forward and all that kind of stuff, right? Traditionally. So it's possible they take a big step forward. But I think there's bigger question marks about those teams than there is about SC and Iowa. SC and Iowa should be able to win a lot of games. However, they are flawed programs.
It's fitting like that they're it's USC equally and Iowa.
Opposite flawed programs. Yes. Like they're bizarro teams. Iowa could not stop a nosebleed last year, and Iowa could not work up any sort of drippage anywhere. So it's the complete opposite.
This analogy,
the same situation, right?
That analogy was. Disgustingly,
I didn't know where I was
on
going
point,
with it, okay?
But
you know what
the,
I mean.
The point being is that if you took Iowa's defense and USC's offense and put them together on one team, that team would roll to the national title and it wouldn't be close. If you put Iowa's offense and USC's defense on the same team, they might finish bottom of NCAA. Like that is the
at least last year until Dan
last
Lynn
year
can,
yeah until Dan Lynn can do some work so yeah, yeah you, USC but, and Iowa are in the same boat. You have to prove that you can be more than just a one sided team. You have to prove you can be balanced, and if either of those teams come out this season and are balanced, then they're gonna be competitive and they're gonna be very, very difficult to beat, and they're certainly gonna be in the mix for the Big Ten title game.
Yeah, we're gonna have to see. If those two teams can do that, Iowa and SC. Let's get to Pac-12. Reprogram yourself. Fix it. Big Ten Media Days. Lincoln Riley went up to the pulpit, the podium, whatever you want to call it, and started his speech this morning. So the season sort of like really began in the Holiday Bowl. That was sort of a new team that SC had put together for the Holiday Bowl, which I think makes sense. I think that there's, you know, when teams are very good, they usually look back to something that happens the season before and say, you know, it all started then, right? Like for Pete Carroll's 2002 team that made it to the Orange Bowl, you can look back and say, well, it all started in 2001 with Chris Richard's pick six at Arizona Stadium in Tucson to beat Arizona 41-34, and like that was a big moment, right? When Leicester won the Premier League, those players will tell you that it's because they won, like they had a 10-game like unbeaten streak the year before, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's always something weird, right? That like, well, we were galvanized by this moment, which no one ever remembers. And I think for SC, if this season is one where SC does take a step forward, contend for the Big Ten, I think Lincoln Riley would have some merit to say that, yeah, the season did begin on a misty night in San Diego, because that was a different team, not only with what we saw on the field, but Caleb Williams was not involved. They had to change a lot of things around. Alex Grinch was not involved with that defense physically, right? Like his scheme certainly still played a role in some sense, but like it was essentially a different team that played in the Holiday Bowl than we had seen certainly in the second half of the season. And SC passed that test with flying colors. And if things are going to progress to year three for Lincoln Riley, but really year one for this new team post Caleb Williams, then yeah, needed to have started in the Holiday Bowl.
Well, and Lincoln Riley later on in his in the press conference talked about how there was a different mentality that the team brought to that bowl game,
mm-hmm.
and that they felt more together than they had, and that they were able to take a lot of the younger players that they had been developing for the two seasons that they had been there and throw them into the fire and see what they did. And we saw certainly from the receivers they stepped up. We saw surprisingly from the offensive line that they stepped up. The quarterback obviously stepped up. And while the defense was still rough, I don't know if I went back and watched it now, if I would think differently, but my memory is that the defense felt like they were playing with better energy, even if it was still a rough go of it, because they were still limited by...
We talked a lot about Taylor Mays, right?
Yeah.
And his he got a lot of credit for like things like tackling and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, they only... And that was a question that got asked of Riley in this press conference, was about the missed tackles. USC was averaging more than 20 missed tackles a game or something like that. I might be exaggerating, but in the Holiday Bowl, they only had 6. And like that was certainly a big difference, whether it was an emphasis on tackling that was brought by some of the like Taylor Mays in practice, or the players were being put schematically into positions where they would be less likely to have to miss a tackle because they were sort of making up ground. Whatever that was, it was a clear step forward, and I think it does bode well, although again we have to keep saying that we can't judge too much off of a bowl game against an opponent that, you know, maybe their hearts weren't in it, and that was the thing. What is USC going to look like when they're playing people who do have their hearts in it? You know, it's going to be very different potentially, but I would agree with Riley that there was a sense of momentum coming out of that game, going into the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's noteworthy that he says that, since the previous year, all of USC's momentum going out of that season was negative. In part because they lost the Pac-12 title game because of the Caleb Williams injury, and then just the way that Tulane happened. It did kind of sap some of the positive energy that they might have had going into last season. So, you know, it's not the end all be all, but it certainly could be a piece of a puzzle that shows USC getting better.
Yeah, and Lincoln was asked about this was in his I think his opening statement. He mentioned that the goal is still to win championships, right? Like he said that when he got introduced at the top of the 1923 club, or Club 1920, whatever it's called, on the top of the Coliseum, almost 3 years ago now, which is crazy to think that time flies that much. But he said at the time that, you know, they were going to win championships, that they were going to make the Coliseum the mecca of college football, something that every Oklahoma fan has, like, tattooed into their brain to remind you about. But he did some interesting, you know, sort of semantic talk on this today I thought was interesting. Quote, our standards at USC are to compete for championships. Whether we're in the beginning of this rebuild we undertook 2 years ago or throughout our entire time here, which is going to be a long time, we are certainly looking forward to competing for championships every year. That's an incredible couple of sentences, because on one hand, it's, you know, reminding people that, hey, this is USC, this is, the expectations are high, all the, and all of those things. And at the same time, also saying, hey, this is going to be year 3 of a rebuild. FYI. Maybe cut some slack. Like, all in the same two sentences. How do you take it?
Also, stop acting like I'm not going to be here anymore. Stop acting like I'm leaving this job. There's so much going on in these two sentences here. So much. I wonder how much of it is calculated.
Well, it was part of his opening thing, it's
part of his
right?
opening statement. So I'm inclined. And even later on, questions that were asked, there was a running theme from Lincoln Riley at this media day. And it was, USC has been in a rebuild. USC is still getting is still sort of climbing the mountain, and that he intends to be the one who carries through that rebuild and that climbing of the mountain. The narrative that USC was bringing forward here, that Lincoln Riley was bringing forward here, was very much to me tailored to, as like a response almost to the Paul Feinbaum of it all, to the conversation about USC and whether or not Lincoln Riley is basically, the train has left the station, as Paul Feinbaum said. This to me felt very much like Riley, and he said later on he doesn't listen to what people say, but like everyone's lying when they say that. Riley being conscious of the criticism that he's been given and leaning into the rebuild conversation, which personally I think is completely valid and is something that I've been saying, you know, from the get-go. And I think I mentioned this in a previous episode, like, I think Lincoln Riley joined USC not realizing how much of a rebuild was actually necessary. And I think that year one skewed a little bit of the understanding of just how much work was going to be needed to do, particularly in the trenches, to get USC into a position where they could win trophies in addition to just, you know, games every, you know, 10 games or whatever. I think that Riley is very much leaning into that language now. And you can, I've seen people be critical of that, saying, you know, that he's making excuses or whatever it is. And I think you're certainly within your rights if you think that. But I think it is worth noting that Riley did take over a rebuild. Riley did take over a program that had won four games the year before. Riley did take over a program that had bare cupboards on the offensive and defensive lines. And he screwed up with his defensive coordinator hire, and he screwed up in other ways. But the fact of the matter is that USC's biggest barriers to immediate success still lie in those long-term program development areas that he can't hit the fast forward button on, that USC needs to ride, you know, ride the wave of momentum that they hope they're bringing to the table.
Yeah, and I think this also sparks the further question of, like, should it, you know, he was asked about listening to or hearing that SC is on the minds of, like, all these different these people, like, at SEC Media Days, that SC has been mentioned and whatnot. And I thought Lincoln Riley did a good job. He's not always said the things that I would sort of prefer a coach to say, but I think he answered it perfectly today by saying, yeah, when you're at a school like SC and you're a blue blood, people are going to talk, like, this is what you sign up for. Mm-hmm. And if you're not comfortable with it, then you're in the wrong place. And I think that that's exactly the way to respond and to sort of be confident in who you are, confident in where you are, while also not sitting in a spot where you're going to be begging for more itself. Don't give more ammo to the people who desperately want the ammo, right? Be about it and go prove them wrong and use that as motivation and all that stuff. And I think it's interesting too when you look back at, you know, SC talking about, or Lincoln Riley talking about the rebuild thing, and but this is still SC and blue blood stuff. It really is the duality of, like, it is both, right? Like, SC is a blue blood. And I think that when we have that in our heads, we always think that those kinds of schools and programs can't go through rebuilds, but they can, they should. Just because you are SC and not UCLA in terms of football brand and prowess and recruiting ability and all that stuff doesn't mean that you shouldn't take the time to dot your I's and cross your T's and invest more money in NIL, which was something that was brought up, and do all the little things right, right? Like, you know, SC fans love to talk about how Oregon's never won a national title, but, like, when Oregon is running circles around you in literally every other aspect, it proves that, like, your history can't cover up all of the holes, right? Like,
yeah,
just because you are a historic program doesn't mean that you literally start on third base and can round it.
Well, but that's the thing, is that this is the interesting thing about USC all the time. And I've had conversations with people about this recently. Like, a program like Oregon is starting on, like, first base, and they need something to get them home. And they've invested a lot. They've made all the trades. I'm trying to make this analogy work. They've done everything they can to find, like, a hitter that can get them home with a triple. But they have to hit a triple, or they have to hit a home run in order to get there. Where USC is born on third base. USC is there. That's the advantage of being a USC or an Ohio State or an Alabama. But that doesn't mean that you you still need somebody to hit the damn single to bring you home.
Right.
You can't have everybody who comes up to bat strike out and then act surprised when you aren't scoring runs. Like, this is where USC falls into the trap of USC has a Manfred man every inning. That doesn't mean you score when the Manfred man is there, because you still need to bring the Manfred man home.
Right.
And the thing that I would, my optimism about USC comes from this place. For decades, literally decades, USC was stuck in an inbreeding, incestuous, we are SC and thus we will just be good because we are, because we say we're good kind of mentality. And went in circles sort of running that race. And the big change that started with the hiring of Mike Bone, which obviously wasn't, you know, I think the hiring of Brandon Sosna was the home run in that, but mm-hmm. They went out of the USC bubble. When Bone left, they went out of the USC bubble, and they brought in people who I think are, we begged and begged and begged for literal decades for USC to hire an athletic director who was good at being an athletic director, or better at being an athletic director than being a football player. And right. USC went football player every time. And my hope is that USC has made, it hasn't all gone smoothly for USC, but USC has made the moves that I've been asking for them to make, which is hire a coveted head coach who is desired by other teams, Lincoln Riley, hire an athletic director who knows what they're doing, who is good at their job, Jen Cohen, and invest in the program. USC is building new football facilities. USC is adjusting their NIL structure to the new reality of NIL. All of that USC is doing, but as Lincoln Riley like said straight out, which I was shocked that he said this straight out, is that they're playing catch up.
Yeah.
USC, this is the quote, we're playing catch up in facilities, we're playing catch up in NIL, we've been playing catch up in nearly damn near every avenue. And he's right, but it's like, the thing is, USC has been playing catch up for longer than just the time that Lincoln Riley has been at USC.
Mm-hmm.
We always, you know, refer back to the Ryan Abraham anecdote about Chris Carlisle asking for, you know, an updated weight room and getting told, well, you're winning with what you have, so keep winning with it. USC built Heritage Hall, built the McKay Center a decade after places like Oregon were already built, were already in the facilities arm race.
Well,
USC finally started adding the support staff stuff, you know, five years after Alabama was already doing it full time. USC took the conservative approach to NIL, and I understand why. Like, there's actual reason why for that one. But they're getting burned on it because other programs sort of saw the writing on the wall that the NCAA wasn't actually going to do anything here, and let's just roll with the Wild West. And USC is now having to sort of rethink the way that they do NIL. My argument with USC has always been, and Brenton in the chat says, I'm confused on NIL. Riley claims it's good, but I don't know. I think the confusion around NIL is that USC has money, more money than most programs out there, more resources, not just NIL, but like dollars that come into the program.
Yeah.
What USC has been bad at is allocating that money efficiently and effectively. And that's where the NIL stuff comes in. It's about, you know, I think USC has plenty of NIL dollars. It's about whether or not their contracts are structured in an advantageous way. It's where they're willing to put those resources. Same on facilities, same on coaching staff. And that's one of the other things. Is like, you can't tell me USC isn't investing in their coaching staff. Lincoln Riley is one of the highest paid head coaches in college football. And I am guessing that defensive staff was not cheap to put together, considering every single one of them are overqualified for their position, except for Danton Lynn. So, yeah. You know, USC is doing the right things. USC is taking those steps forward. It's just not as fast as people would like it to transform.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned the defensive coaching staff. I think it was interesting that he was asked about Danton Lynn, and he talked about, you know, he had this 30-minute phone call with him, and it was like a preliminary thing, but like he immediately knew that he was the guy. They were finishing each other's sentences. They were on the same page. They have the same viewpoint in you know, how defense should be prioritized and all these kind of things, right? But he said that, like, how good Danton was last year at, you know, rebuilding UCLA, and because of that, he was coveted, and that all of the names that were interested in USC were not sort of the names that would have been available 2 years ago or 2 years before when he got to SC. And it makes me wonder how much of that is accurate, how much of that is speculative because he was going to always bring Grinch, and so he, like, it's hard to say because he didn't actually put up the wanted sign, so he's just speculating on that because he had Grinch. And how much of it was SC needed to spectacularly fail on defense to encourage people to want to go to USC to be the defensive coach? Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, I don't know that I completely sort of buy it totally. I
suspect he's probably talking about just like the general resources of what's being invested in the program have gotten better since the first day he walked in.
I think the priority in needing a damn good defensive coordinator went up, and maybe by doing that you end up with better candidates.
I mean, also I agree that he didn't. I am inclined to think that he was just going to bring Grinch with him, but
right.
He also had to put together...
Which means it would have been speculative.
He had to put together the defensive staff, though, and I wonder if there were more limitations at that time in terms of who they could go out and hire for that staff, because there were more gaps on that staff than in other places. So, I don't know. I think the big thing here is just that it's very clear that USC is talking serious about improving all of these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, as
West not just talking, but we're seeing that the hires on defense steps. Are yeah. serious. Yeah.
Yeah. West Texas Mike says, I don't believe anything anyone tells me. Everything is propaganda. Well, yeah, that's true. This is why you should always take things that you hear in press conferences with a grain of salt.
Right.
Because you can say whatever you want. And you know, there's no proof behind what you're saying. Every year, everybody says, you know, oh, he's in the best shape of his life. Oh, he feels as good as he's ever felt.
I don't actually know that Deshaun Foster is excited.
Yeah, Deshaun Foster says he's excited.
I don't think that's proven.
No.
I really don't.
The point is that you sort of have to read between the lines, I think, for all of these. And I think there are actual signs that these things are coming together.
I think it's possible when you put it to like, it, you know, this is just completely just harebrained. This comes from nowhere. This is just me throwing this out there. I think it's possible that there was a world where it's like, okay, we're bringing you in, and this is your budget for staff, which will cover you to bring in your Oklahoma staff.
Yeah.
And so, that's what it was, because you wanted them, right? Like, yeah, I did want them. Okay, cool. So, all right, we're all good then. So we're all on the same page. Cool. And then 2 years down the line, they're like, oh, yeah, we got to up the defensive budgets. And then now you actually have to look for guys. And then by looking for guys, you end up with bigger names. And then this becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that more interested names are there, right? Like,
yeah, because you're making the job available.
Yes.
Because it was openly available.
Exactly. Yeah. But the point is, SC went out and put their money where their mouth is on defense, and now they have to sort of take the step forward. All the stuff that Lincoln Riley said about Danton Lynn and Matt Entz, I thought was good. He called Matt Entz an outside-the-box hire, developing players, disciplined coordinator and head coach, resources as a head coach, development idea. Those were like a long list that Riley put out about Matt Entz. I want to talk about the Notre Dame game, because there was a quote from Connor Morissette of USCFootball.com on the Notre Dame game in which Lincoln Riley says he would love to keep the Notre Dame game alive, but if something... But he says that if eliminating the game would help USC win a national title, they would look at it. Quote, it's not an easy answer. Alicia, I am going to say the most incendiary thing I've ever said, probably. I honestly think that's the right way to look at it, right? Like, I know that tradition and all those things, but, like, this sounds batshit, and it's not something that I like because I love tradition, but... In a lot of ways, we are in a post-tradition society in college football. USC is in a conference with Rutgers and Maryland. You know what I mean? Like, they're not playing Stanford and Cal anymore. There's no weekender. You know, up is down, left is right. All those things are a thing now. And you're playing a 9-game conference schedule in the 1B hardest conference in America. It's hard to add Notre Dame to that also on the periphery and then still put together an out-of-conference schedule. I think there is a world in which, like, that's not a crazy answer from Lincoln Riley. As much as it sucks for all the warm, fuzzy feelings that you feel about, you know, the picture of SC's offensive line against Notre Dame's defensive line and how beautiful it looks. Like, he's not wrong. If it, like, playing Notre Dame every year does not help your chances of winning a national championship.
Yes.
Even though it would suck not to, for that to be the case.
So this very, very, very much comes down to the out-of-conference scheduling complexity of locking in one opponent every year and only having two games, one difficult opponent at the end of your season.
The difficult opponent is Notre Dame already.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You are locked in with Notre Dame, usually at the end or in the middle of your season.
Mm-hmm.
More costly games. It becomes a challenge, I think, for sure. And I think he references, like, Nick Saban, and it's interesting referencing the SEC, because in the SEC, who do they schedule in November? They schedule the Sisters of the Poor, and it gives them a chance, a week to rest guys. And,
well,
and
I'm going to jump in really quick. I know YouTube hates when I cut you off, but I have to. The SEC does have a similar scenario here, because there are a bunch of SEC schools that have ACC rivals at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Florida plays Florida State.
Yeah.
Georgia plays Georgia Tech. South Carolina plays Clemson, right? Like, we know that those rivalries exist, and this is part of the reason why the SEC schedule wraps up in early November for those schools. So they can, Florida can play Wofford before they play Florida State, right?
Yeah.
But also, the what when Florida State joined the ACC in 1991, I don't think it's a coincidence that also coincided with Florida not having played a road game out of the state of Florida until last year, since 1991. Like, those years line up for a reason. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, and, you know, one of my good friends sent me that tweet, and he's like, why are we so cowardly, or something to that effect, like, Nick Saban would never do this. I think Nick Saban would also cancel the Notre Dame thing. And, you know, West Texas Mike says that Lincoln Riley has got to stop sounding like he's ducking the competition. And I agree, because this is something that does make Lincoln Riley look like he's ducking the competition. But I think every other coach in America, with the exception of, like, Clay Helton, who's happy to have the SC job and just wants to say all of the fan servicey things to get brownie points for it, would agree that playing Notre Dame like this, in a lot of ways, is sort of campaign suicide. And, like, I do think that maybe that changes with the 12-team playoff, and if it expands to 16 or whatever that they're going to talk about, like.
But now you're talking, like,
maybe that changes.
And but if you are looking at this from a logistical perspective, and I have other thoughts on this that I do want to get to. But if you're looking at this from a logistical perspective, in order to win a national championship, you have to win more games than you've ever had to win before. And if you are choosing to include a team that is of a high caliber on your out-of-conference schedule voluntarily, then you have to win, you know, 16, 17 games, and you're willingly putting one of those as an extra difficult opponent every year, where you are potentially straining your team, you're continuing to strain your travel already. I mean, you're already straining your travel, but now you're straining your travel even more. I understand the logistics of saying this does not actually suit us in terms of the health of my team, in terms of the logistics of my team, all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It makes perfect sense. This is about the business of college football. That all very much comes together, and I understand why Lincoln Riley does this,
yeah,
or is thinking this way. And I agree with you. I think the vast majority of coaches nationally would also think this way. They aren't being presented with the question, because the vast majority of them are not playing coaching teams that already had a historic intersectional rivalry.
Yeah.
You know, no one is asking, no one's asking Ohio State about whether or not they want to schedule Texas every year from here until eternity, because that game doesn't exist and it's not even a question for them. It's a completely different sort of situation. Having said all of that, I hate this. I hate it a lot.
It sucks. Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah.
I feel a deep, dark pit in my stomach suggesting to me that the Notre Dame rivalry is not long for this world unless Notre Dame joins the Big Ten.
It sucks.
I don't think that Lincoln Riley is just, puffing up his chest to sort of send a threat to Notre Dame about joining the Big Ten. I think legitimately, if Notre Dame does not join the Big Ten, this rivalry is going to go by the wayside. And I absolutely hate that. It sucks. It's terrible. I wish USC wouldn't. Wish that I would like to hear from a coach who understands the logistical challenges of what playing Notre Dame faces, and still says, even though this will make our life harder, by playing Notre Dame, we will have to prove our mettle.
Yeah.
And by playing Notre Dame, we will prove that we can win a national title. So Notre Dame does not actually impact our ability to win a national title. No, playing Notre Dame proves that we are there, that we are ready to do that. I would like to approach Notre Dame from that kind of perspective of, you're not going to win a national title unless you're capable of beating them anyways.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's one way to look at it. And I think the other way to look at it too, and you know, maybe this is silly, but like we have EA Sports College Football 25 out now, right? And when you look at, you finish a season in Dynasty and you look at the records of the teams in the playoff, there's a lot of three-loss teams in there. Maybe four losses, but after they lose in the playoffs. So, like, I think the other thing you can say is, you could probably make the argument that, like, playing Notre Dame every year did not make sense in the BCS era. It did not make sense in the four-team playoff, which means it's more likely to make sense now than before. And I think that that's a logical take too.
Like, I think it makes less sense now in the 12-team playoff. And I'll tell you why.
More sense in a certain way, but not completely.
As a Power 4 team, your resume matters less now than it did during the 14 because resume,
because of the auto bid?
Resume did actually come into place for the 14 playoff in a way that resume will not come into place for teams like USC. Now, for G5s and other teams, like, that's not going to be the case. But for a team like USC, if USC makes it through the Big Ten schedule with two losses or less, USC will be in the playoff. Unless
playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
Unless this whole thing plays out in a different way, in a completely unexpected way, which is entirely possible. This is uncharted territory. But the fact of the matter is that in a 12-team playoff for a team like USC, record is actually, like, just black and white record is actually going to be determined more, a greater determination of whether or not USC gets into the field than with the 4-team playoff, where you can have a good record and still get left out. We saw teams with good records get left out.
I think there's a little bit of both. I think you're right. I think at the flip side of it is there's an auto bid.
Yeah.
You can go 8-5 and win the Big Ten and you're in. Who cares?
Yeah, but you have to win the Big Ten.
But you have to win the Big Ten.
But again, if you can't win the Big Ten, are you actually going to win the national title?
Right. Well, this goes back to, you know, we just did bar trivia the first time last week, which I've always wanted to do so bad. But we did bar trivia, and at the end, there's a final question. And the final question is worth 25 points. Up to 25 points, you can wager however much you want. But, like, we would always come to the agreement that, like, even if it would make sense to not go with the full 25 points unless somebody else got it wrong, the odds are you're only going to actually win this thing if you get that right. So you might as well just put the 25 points in there. So you're only going to win a national championship if you're able to beat Notre Dame anyway, so you might as well still play them.
Yeah, and sort of find out earlier. Yeah. I think it's... Yeah. I understand the logic.
Sure.
I wish that heart would guide this more than head is where I'm at. Like, I recognize that, like, I am coming from this argument from a heart perspective.
Yeah, as an Notre Dame grad, yeah.
HR Pick and Stuff in the chat says that Riley needs to learn to say no comment, Journalism 101. Here's the problem if you're Lincoln Riley. I'm glad you brought this up. Here's the problem if you're Lincoln Riley. You literally cannot win because they asked him about the comments from Castiglione, the AD at Oklahoma. He made a comment about how...
Oh, my God.
What?
I'm just going to let you... Just keep going.
I know I said it wrong. I just can't remember. What is it? Joe...
I'm not even... It's not that.
Okay, whatever it is. Whatever it is, the AD at Oklahoma said something about how, like, the coaches that weren't excited about being in the SEC aren't here anymore. And it was very clearly a shot at Lincoln Riley. And so they asked Lincoln Riley about that, and Lincoln Riley said, I'm not going to get into that, next question. And he got murdered for it on Twitter because it's him not facing up to the comment. So, like... No matter what he says, Lincoln Riley is going to get into trouble by saying no comment too, because people have decided that they're going to project their opinions onto Lincoln Riley no matter what is said. When it comes down to it, here's the thing. Lincoln Riley can say A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, whatever he's going to say. If he wins a national title, he wins it. If he doesn't win a national title, he will face the criticism. It does not matter what he says. So long as he's not Mike Gundy out there talking about how he is driven drunk, it really doesn't matter what he says. So long as he sticks to coach speak, what matters is, did he win a national title at USC? That's where he will be judged. Not by what he says, by what he does. Because he's going to be judged by what he says until that day, no matter what.
Yeah, That everything comes down to winning. It absolutely comes down to winning. When you're winning, you can say anything. When you're losing, you can't say anything because it comes down to winning. Yeah, yep. Yeah, absolutely. All right, we've talked a lot about Big Ten Media Days. We're a little behind, so let's take a quick break and get into everyone's favorite segment of the off season, talking about the Big Ten.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A big 10 minutes. All right, let's learn about Purdue University, one of the few universities in the Big Ten or elsewhere that was named Purdue University and stuck with it. Stuck with it. Its name.
There are
1869.
Day one.
Yeah. No changes, no like normal school of Northern Indiana or anything like that. No, just Purdue University from the beginning to today. Purdue University, 1869. From West Lafayette, Indiana. They are the Boilermakers. Why are they the Boilermakers? You're going to love this, Alicia. Purdue badly beat Wabash College, a local college there in Indiana, in 1889 and 1891. Local papers around Wabash were calling Purdue sort of this, like, a team of bullies. Quotes were like, quote, a great big burly gang of cornhuskers, and called them, quote, rail splitters, and featured a headline that read, quote, Wabash snowed completely under by the burly Boilermakers from Purdue. It stuck.
So, what can we just clarify? What is a Boilermaker? Like, why?
I didn't do that part of the research. I think the Boilermaker is just the people who work on the railroads, right?
So what they basically said was these working class guys.
Yeah.
Were a big gang of working class guys.
Yeah. These corn fed beefy dudes are beefing us. Yeah, okay. Basically. Yeah. Basically. And so there they are. They're the Boilermakers. And then they have the little choo-choo as part of their identity, which is awesome. Purdue Pete is their mascot. And Alicia, we got to talk about Purdue Pete. What are your thoughts on Purdue Pete? Throwing up a picture here on YouTube if you're joining us. What are your thoughts?
Okay, so the funny thing.
First of all, describe it for the listeners.
Okay, Purdue Pete is a miner, I suppose, who has a plastic head.
I mean, I think he's of age.
a person who mines, who works in the mines.
Now, what did we talk about Boilermakers being? The people who work on railroads.
Oh, okay. Fine.
That's not a pickaxe.
He is a person with a hammer.
Yeah.
Or a sledgehammer of some kind.
He drives in rails.
He has a face that is made of plastic with a giant chin, very large cartoon eyes that look dead inside and stare deep into your soul.
Yeah.
It is nightmare fuel, and it was nightmare fuel. It's nightmare fuel in the picture that Michael has put up, which you can go to YouTube to look at, or Google. But the funny thing is that Michael put the picture in our rundown. And not to steal too much time from your big 10 minutes, but I use inverted colors on my screen because I have sensitive eyes. So the picture is inverted, and it's more nightmare fuel than that even. Just confirming the full nightmare fuel parade.
Purdue Pete to me looks like if Woody left... left the band of toys earlier and got put to work. And like, this is Woody's brother who didn't become a cowboy.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, but like...
This mask scary. Could be in a horror movie. Like, this could be the killer's mask in the horror movie.
Yeah, Pistol Pete from Oklahoma State and Purdue Pete. Couple of scary Petes. I'll tell you that. They scare the Pete out of me. Let's get to the fight song, Hail Purdue. Hail. Hail to our old Purdue. All hail to our old gold and black. Hail, hail to old Purdue. Our friendship may she never lack. Ever grateful, ever true, thus we raise our song anew of the days we've spent with you. All hail our own Purdue.
Okay, I love the rhyming scheme.
Lot of rhymes.
I love the rhyming. I am a fan of rhyming. I get mad when things don't rhyme, and this had tons of rhyming. Very, very satisfying.
Yeah.
I was going to make fun of them for overusing old, but then I remembered that they've been Purdue since 1869, so it is literally like they get to go with old Purdue because Purdue, the name is old. Yeah. 10 out of 10. Love it.
Yeah. 10 notable alums or so. We'll talk about Neil Armstrong. You might know him as being a USC grad. He got his BS at Purdue. He was actually at the 1967 Rose Bowl rooting on Purdue against the Trojans, along with several other astronauts, including two of the Apollo 1 astronauts who would ultimately meet their demise 3 weeks later.
Wow.
Which is brutal. A lot of astronauts went to Purdue, including those two guys on Apollo 1. Neil Armstrong ended up becoming a master's student at SC, and while he was a master's student, he also stepped on this thing called the moon. David D. Thompson served as the first vice chief of space ops in the U.S. Space Force from Purdue. How about Herman Cain, former politician and CEO of Godfather's Pizza? He's a Boilermaker. Ted Allen, the chef on the original Queer Eye, which, by the way, Queer Eye, I like the original cast better, right? The original one from like 20 years ago? Better.
I actually really liked the reboot.
I like the original one. Jim Gaffigan, comedian, played football at Purdue. Harold Gray, the creator of Little Orphan Annie, went to Purdue. Millie Bobby Brown, you know, from Stranger Things and Enola Holmes. She is literally right now enrolled in online classes at the Purdue University Global Online, whatever it is.
I could have predicted a lot of things that were going to be in this big 10 minutes. I would have never predicted that Millie Bobby Brown is a Boilermaker, technically.
Unbelievable. The CEOs currently of John Deere, UPS, C-SPAN, and Mackey's, McDonald's, all Boilermakers. Former Indiana State head coach in basketball, little sort of obscure guy named John Wooden went to Purdue. Professional wrestler Dick the Bruiser, a 13-time heavyweight champion in the World Wrestling Association, a Boilermaker. Alicia, let's talk about the famous Boilermaker football players. Len Dawson, Bob Greasy, Drew Brees, Gary Danielson, Jim Everett, Hank Stram, Mike Alstott, Rod Woodson. A lot of big names there. One weird Purdue fact, football-wise. USC's career leader in receptions, Marquise Lee, has 248 career catches. In the 2000s, the aughts alone, Purdue had three different receivers. You had more than that, including Taylor Stubblefield, who caught an astronomical amount of passes, 316, which is insane.
This shouldn't surprise given the quarterback talent that's come out. Like, it's a quarterback factory, but that's still
it's nuts.
Wild.
It's nuts, yeah. No national championships for Purdue. They have, I believe, 12 Big Ten titles. The last one was in 2000 with Drew Brees when they went to go on to play in the Rose Bowl. Before that, they hadn't won the conference since 1967 or 66, and then ended up at the 1967 Rose Bowl against the Trojans. That was with Bob Greasy. USC and Purdue have met four times. SC's won three of them. They lost the Rose Bowl in 1967. John McKay rolled the dice, went for two, but Troy Winslow, his pass was intercepted in the end zone before he could get to Rod Sherman to try to win the game in the final minutes. SC comfortably won a home-and-home in the 1970s. And then the great Purdue game of 1998, the 11:30 infamous kickoff of the Pigskin Classic.
The stuff of legends.
PurdueSports.com says, quote, temperatures on the Coliseum field reached 110-plus degrees, and several USC band members, a cheerleader, and a number of fans fainted from the heat. The crowd of 56,623 thinned out considerably as the game wore on, with about a third of the fans in their seats remaining by the middle of the final quarter. I was at that game. It was permanently burned into my brain. I will never forget it. There was a guy who used to sit in front of us in Section 12. A big fella, probably like 3 bills, who literally brought 2 water jugs, like gallon water jugs of water. So this is like pre-9/11, right? So you can just get that through the gates. And was like double fisting these things like he was at the gym. It was insane. SC won that game with a true freshman in his debut named Carson Palmer out dueling another guy named Drew Brees. I don't know if you ever heard of the two. Purdue, not good. They were 4-8 last year under Ryan Walters in year two. Goes into year two this year. They return only 11 starters. SC, Michigan, and Washington are the only schools in the Big Ten who have fewer than that. The Trojans and the Boilermakers will not play until 2025, next year in West Lafayette, and then 2028 at the Coliseum, except that probably will be at SoFi, right? We'll find out.
Wait, SoFi? At the post? Yeah, it's still not
clear. Rose Bowl.
It's still not clear.
Dodger Stadium.
What the plan is. It's pretty wild, but...
Dado Field. I don't know.
Be nice to know.
Home Depot Center. Who knows? San Diego. Maybe they'll play in San Diego.
Could we do like Northwestern is doing and have them build a little football stadium right here at the lake near us so that we don't have to travel that far?
Wait, hold on. What? Northwestern's playing in a temporary place?
Yes, they're playing at a temporary stadium like that they're building like lakeside.
Really?
That at least that's what I read.
They're not playing at Wrigley after all?
No, they're not playing at Wrigley after all.
When did I miss this memo?
I don't know. I know that I've read this semi-recently, so I think I'm...
Well, Hawaii's playing in a temporary venue, too, but they host UCLA this year. They hosted Stanford last year, but they host UCLA this year at a temporary venue, which is nuts, too.
There you go.
Because they're rebuilding Aloha Stadium, so... All right.
As West Texas Mike points out, the OC of the Purdue Boilermakers, Graham Harrell.
There you go. Didn't have that in the research.
Probably did not.
All right. Let's go to the mailbag.
You've got mail.
Start with questions we've got on the old YouTube. Jessica says, what are your thoughts about UCLA's opening statement? If you have not seen it, you need to go find it.
Okay, so to describe this to those that haven't seen it, Deshaun Foster was up on the stage saying, he said something like, you know, you guys don't know a lot about UCLA. Long pause. We are long pause in Los Angeles. Long pause. It's just us and USC. Long pause.
Okay. Oh, hold on. I've got
Can
the,
you play the audio?
No, I've got the quotes.
Okay, here we go. You'll do a dramatic reading. Let's go.
Coach Foster, welcome to the Big Ten. We'll begin with your opening statement. Happy to be here. Glad to be a part of this great conference. Finally putting 2 great emblems together, UCLA. In the Big Ten. We're a school that's won, 123 championships? So this fits us being in this conference. Football-wise, we're just excited. I'm sure you guys don't know too much about UCLA, our football program, but we're in L.A., it's us in USC. I'm just basically really excited. That's it. Any questions? There you go. There's the reenactment. Jake will let us know.
And he might have gotten through that quicker than Deshaun Foster did. So here's the thing.
He said more things in his first answer to a question than he did in his opening statement.
Yeah, okay. Deshaun Foster, first-time head coach. Never had to do media days.
To me, this is on the SID, not him, by the way.
The SID should have prepared him with opening remarks. It should have let him know that this was coming.
If you're not going to have opening remarks, then you got to have a power move of like, you know what?
Let's just get into it.
Yeah. You can do that, but if you're going to start with something, you gotta say something.
Yeah. Yeah. On a human level, I feel so
very
bad.
Relatable. I could see myself doing this.
So bad. As you know, when you get into a situation where you know you need to say something, you know you need to sound a certain way, but then the words leave your brain. The words just leave your brain and you have no words and you're just stuck. And I feel very deeply for him. But it is objectively hilarious that the head coach of UCLA football had two things to say about the UCLA football program. Number one, it is in LA. And number two, it is in LA with USC. That's all he had to say. Like that, he did not say anything else about the UCLA football program except for Los Angeles and USC, which
this is the same conference incredible. In which Ohio State will put big black X's over every M on the entire campus for a week.
I mean, this is objectively funny, and I'm just like, I'm having a good time laughing about it. But like, the thing is that Deshaun Foster is a really personable guy. Like, if you watch any of his other interviews at Big Ten Media Day, if you watch any of his answers to questions, like he's a very personable guy. Like, he's not that guy. Which kind of makes it funnier because, like, what happened? What was going through his
brain? Well, it was, you know, not to get political or anything, but it's like the Mitch McConnell thing where he just like,
dude, he just
turned off.
He just turned off. He just froze. Yeah.
Yeah. The little cursor was spinning with the little rainbow thing. Yeah.
Reboot.
Yeah. All right. I think that's gonna wrap us up. I think the only other question that we had today is about Formula One, which I know that not everybody is a huge fan for. So we'll be back.
McLaren likes to be akin to USC sometimes, is what I've learned.
McLaren, the Knicks. Well, maybe they're not the Knicks. No. Haas is the Knicks. But anyways, we'll be back next week. Join us on July 31st, talk more USC football. But if you want to stick around, here's talk about Formula One. We got this email from Tony in Denora, PA. Michael, he said, "This is Tony from Denora, PA. I turned in the Hungarian race late. What was that? They made Norris give up the win to Piastri because they are teammates? That's not a true win. It's Brett Favre hitting the ground for a stray hand sack. Horrible finish. Fight on."
This is one of the most insane things about F1 dynamics that I don't think there are comparisons in sport for. The idea that a team could have both of their drivers, just the two-driver dynamic in Formula One is crazy on its own. But you end up in this situation where you have a team that's going to win 1-2, but they have to go through a crazy amount of politics and loops, you know, jumping through hoops and sort of figuring out these sort of logic and all of these things about deciding like who is going to finish first, who deserves to finish first, who is most advantageous to the team to have finish first.
Well, so like if you don't know what happened, McLaren was in first and second place for the race. And there is a thing about when you do your pit stops that can affect essentially the order of the race. And so they were in first and second. There was no doubt that they were going to finish in first and second as long as their cars didn't blow up. And so there's two competitions in F1. There's the team competition, and then there's the individual drivers' championship. The drivers' championship is what the fans care about. The team competition is what the teams, the constructors' competition is what the teams care about. So it's as if you played football and the teams cared about who wins the game, but all the fans only care about fantasy points and nothing else. And the players only care about fantasy points and nothing else. Like, they don't care about winning the game as much as they do just getting the most fantasy points.
Yeah.
So it's like that. And Lando Norris, who is the older, more veteran McLaren driver who is at least number two in the driver's championship, and he has a chance to potentially win it this year. He was told, even though he was in first place, to give up the race for his teammate because his teammate was ahead at the beginning of the race before they did the pit stops. And so, they had agreed.
The team made the decision to pit Lando first, which allowed Lando to get into first place. If they had pit Oscar first, Oscar would have been in first place.
Yeah.
But because the team made the decision to pit Lando first, then Lando ended up in first, but then the team was like, well, but Oscar was in first before we made the decision to put you in first, technically, because we had you pit. Right. So now you need to give it back up.
But at one point in the race, like, he's ahead by like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
At which point, to me, that's not just the benefit of an undercut. And an undercut is when you pit first, you get new tires, and you, on your new tires, are now driving faster than the car who still hasn't pitted on their old tires.
Yeah.
And so you can make up time. But when you're up like 5 seconds, like the undercut usually is, we're talking like 2 seconds.
Well, and as Lando said, like if he wants the place, he can come get it.
And that's what they should have. He wasn't close enough. And you know what I figured out? It's silly because Lando is the one who can beat Max Verstappen for the champion, the driver's championship, not Piastri.
Yeah. The analogy that I just came up with, the comparison that I just popped into my head is in soccer. If
the golden boot?
Your team gets a penalty. The person who won the penalty wants to take the penalty, but then you have somebody who is the penalty taker, and then it's a question of like the person who won the penalty. If they take the penalty, they get the golden boot, but you have the designated penalty taker whose job it is to take the penalty. What do you do? What's right. your conversation? How do you figure that out? Like. Yeah. There is no comparison in football. Like it is completely foreign and crazy.
That's what I'm saying. The only thing I can think of is fantasy points.
Yeah.
But again, like that doesn't exactly work. So yeah, I either way, McLaren sounded really stupid on the radio. Can you please give it up? Please? Do you remember what we talked about? Please. It was
yikes.
Kind of embarrassing for a team that seemingly everybody likes and well liked and has an American running it.
I like McLaren, but these are just more evidence that they are not ready to win a championship.
All right, we'll be back next week. We'll talk more USC football as we get closer and closer to the start of the football season. Even though, like we said, the football season technically starts in 13 minutes when Chelsea and Wrexham kick off. But next week we're talking Rutgers in the Big 10 minutes. Only Rutgers and Wisconsin left, Wisconsin. So get ready for that. So until then, we will see you. See ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.